This is a Deese World production in association with Pants Pending Studios.
Is this just a situation where you're going to cut a bunch of our blurbs out of context?
No, because then there would be blisters in awkward places, which would be terrible.
Oh, here we go. That is the dirtiest thing I've ever seen.
Listen to The Nerd with Adam, Will, and Amanda.
Why did I get top billing? I don't deserve top billing.
Because out of the two of us, you're the one she likes better.
Aw, man. I mean, yeah.
I'm 8 months pregnant. Put another one in me.
And that's when she figured out that I had taken drugs.
How are all of you? We're going to do a promo, but we're just going to talk sex.
I got to see your dick.
Aw, man. I mean, yeah.
She cooked dinner for me in lingerie, which hopefully she doesn't listen to this. I don't know if I'm supposed to say that.
This podcast phenomenon is sweeping the nation, and we're all up on the bandwagon with the plethora of episodes at nerd.pantspending.com.
Willem Dafoe gives me a lady boner.
Blue Chew is bullshit, by the way.
Listen to The Nerd. It's not the worst thing that can happen to you. Is that a good no? It takes effort to do a promo.
Yeah.
And I think we knew that before.
Although I feel like we could just put that part in.
Yeah.
That along with the nerdy thing Adam said and me with the sexy voice. There you go. There's your promo, Will. Congratulations.
The Nerd. I'm sorry.
You're now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
Just find the right vagina, you won't be sucking dick no more.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Deese World Studios in Spokane, Washington, this is The Social Hour. On today's show, Deese sits down one-on-one with former producer of the show and artist, Trez Swartout. And now your host. Now that Christmas is over, he can finally start listening to Mariah Carey again with pride. Deese Casillas.
Malib Keen, everyone, welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Deese. Thank you for taking a listen and coming back around to the show. This is a special holiday season episode of The Social Hour. Sophie and Jeremy are gone this evening enjoying their holidays with their families, or maybe Jeremy's with his mistress. I don't know.
Oh, I get why you brought me on. I don't have a family.
You know that voice, guys. In studio, former producer of the show, friend of the show, my buddy. Give it up. Trez Swartout is here. Trez, how you doing, man?
Yo, what's up, people?
Thanks for coming back. It's just Trez and I in studio. I was this kind of... It was a good time. We were just talking about this off the air before the mics heated up. That I've been... a couple things. I've been wanting to do more one-on-one episodes. I really like... the times I do them... not that I don't love having Jeremy and Sophie here, the whole crew, and having a guest, and kind of it's a different episode. It's interactive. It's fun. It's wacky. There's hijinks. I say offensive things that'll ensure I am never an elected official. But the times I get to do one-on-one episodes, I find that in the past I dread going up to them, feeling like I'm going to run out of things to talk about this person or something. And then they end up being some of my favorite episodes. Sometimes I've done one-on-one episodes with people I never met before, didn't know, and they end up being some of the things I enjoy the most. I like getting, you get to really dig in and talk to someone for a while and get to know them. So I've been wanting to do that. And I've been wanting to get Trez back on the show just to come hang out. And then I kind of put out this call to see who would want to do this. And then Trez said he was available. So I'm like, it's perfect timing. Let's do it. We've been talking a lot recently about art and life, you know, off air. You know, we've been conversing about a lot of different things. Everyone's got the, you know, I think the seasonal depression.
Yeah, and then unfortunately. That,
and then the season ends and you turn. It turns out you just have depression, That'll be like, oh, it's just regular old depression, it turns out. I hate life all the time.
It's just magnified in the winter.
Yeah, right? Why is that?
Well, you know, the lack of sun, mostly. The freezing cold weather that keeps you kind of cooped up a little bit.
Yeah, you don't get to do... The sun's a big part of it, I think. I don't think people... realize how important that is. When I am during the summertime, I don't sleep much anyway, but like during the summertime, I'm energized. Like I stay up later. I wake up earlier. I just require less sleep and I'm going all day. Like I'm out and I'm running, I'm playing volleyball, I'm biking, I'm swimming, you know,
I feel
good. You know, in the wintertime, you know, it's dark and you wake up and it's dark. It's dark again by 5 o'clock. You feel beat down. Like, it's 5 o'clock. You're like, I should probably hibernate or something. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. You're tired. It's just like, well, shoot, the day is over, I guess.
Yeah. And so, I mean, there is something to be. I actually had this crazy thought one time is. If you could, I actually wrote a story about it. I spun it into a fantasy, like comic book type story that I still want to write it one day, and made it about a guy who turns into a werewolf. So it's called Daybreaker. That's what I called it. And
those are vampires' teeth.
But he doesn't want to see the moon.
Okay.
He doesn't want to see nighttime. So what he does is he just ensures that he's always, somewhere during the day, and he's like, he was like this rich guy, and he has a private jet, and he just chases the sun.
Wow.
And he continually stays in places where it's sunny out, right? And I thought about that. I was thinking about that story and that as an you know, realistically, like, I wonder if you could do that in life. If you could actually, I mean, physically you could.
No. That's really where my head's at, is like from taking it from an idea to something that I want to implement into my real life.
Yeah.
And first of all, I just want to say that I was really inspired by my grandmother, who like basically got divorced from my grandpa. Mm-hmm. Had access to like extra resources and was able to sort of make decisions.
I'm inspired by my grandma because she said, fuck my grandpa. Dipped out.
You know, he's a busy man doing stuff here in Spokane. Yeah. And she's actually a really, really talented artist. So, you know, I can feel that.
Yeah.
Not the talented part, but just her spirit, you know. And basically, I saw the way that she lived her life. You know, after the divorce, and she basically got a condo in downtown Spokane and lived there like when it was nice, and then got a house in the desert and goes down there during the winter.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you know, freaking my working ass was like stuck in Spokane,
collecting
her mail and shit, sending it down to her. I don't know. You know, I was really inspired by her decision to move downtown. That's kind of like what had me move downtown a few years back. And it's like, that was an amazing experience. I'm like stoked about it. I got to soak up a lot of Spokane culture during that time. Then I was like inspired to take it to the next step. All right, well, you're going to like get out of here when it's cold. Like, me too.
Yeah.
And started doing that. And it's amazing, Deese. Like, the difference is kind of like night and day, or, summer and winter, if you will.
Yeah. What a weird analogy. It really is. I mean, I've, you know, again, not only just the going in the summer, but, you know, I find when I vacation, I love to go to Latin American places. Mm-hmm. Just so, you know, I'm Mexican. Everyone knows that. Being in Latin culture.
Wait, immersed, what the fuck?
Yeah, I know, right?
I'm out of here.
Still made it. Being immersed in Latin culture makes me, there's something about that too. It just makes me happy. Like, I find the food, the music, the architecture.
Yeah, the bright colors. Yeah. Like the sort of like, I don't know if it's the right word of saying it, but like the patio areas that they have, like sort of like the central gathering places and certain styles of house. And it's just like, it's just made for like a quality standard of living, really.
Yeah, a little more, you know, a little more stop and, you know, stop and chill for a second. Hang out. Just don't be so rushed. Right. This is one of the things I want to talk to you about today is I was talking to someone else the other day about this too, and we kind of touched on it, but and it's funny because I was, it's one of the things I was planning to talk about, and I was talking with someone yesterday and you brought it up off air, but kind of like this and mental health and refilling your tank and how,
yes.
You know, I was talking to someone about the model that America uses and how I, you know, something I've said to you recently, how I'm very done with this. Like I'm ready to leave. Like I'm ready to go.
Yeah,
I'm like ready to move to Costa Rica and never come back. And in the words I told Traz the other day, and I'm like, I'm not talking like go for a while. I'm talking like burn my passport and never come back type of thing. Like, don't care if I don't come back. Don't care if I, you know, I guess, sorry, family, I'll never see you again. They'll live. I don't think they'll notice the difference. Their quality of life, if anything, will go up because they'll have one less person they feel obligated to call once a year.
Like, what are we going to do on Christmas?
Yeah, still not see Deese. And I, you know, I was talking to someone about the model that like, you know, Norway uses, or, you know, we began talking about France and how they mandate the 6 weeks off a year for their workers. And then, you know, Norway, similar, you know, social model. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were just talking about how that affects mental health and people's mental health and how, you know, there's a whole gamut of things that are in America that are problems. So I think one of them is people have three jobs and can't fucking make rent.
Yeah,
you know,
really fucking sucks.
And like,
such a defeating feeling.
Yeah. I mean, literally it's just meant to survive. Like they're just barely surviving. And that's no way to live, man. You wonder why these people kill themselves or shoot up schools or whatever. And,
yeah.
And
unfortunately, gosh, man, I just have been hearing, stuff's hitting too close to home is the bottom line.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, we really are kind of at a mental health crisis in this country just in general.
Yeah.
But then also, you know, for the good people of Spokane, you know, our family, our friends, you know, it's extra depressing during the winter. Like shit, it's like we need every little bit of help we can get almost. Like,
right.
And that's definitely how I feel.
Yeah, I feel this. It's so crazy that we've just gotten to a point where, you know, again, people are just forced to work and get no actual benefit from. Statistically, like this whole pull yourself up by your bootstraps thing. I mean, 60% of wealth, over 60% of wealth is like willed to people is through, you know, you get it through
inheritance.
Yeah. That's the word I'm looking for. So the other 30% of wealth floating around there is just everyone else gets to fight over it.
Yeah,
that's a crazy statistic.
It is. Oh man. Yeah, there's also like crazy concentrations of wealth among just like the super ridiculously rich and elite, you know what I mean, in the sense of like billions of dollars, where it's just $1 billion is incomparable, you know, to the $30,000 that homeboy's making with two kids, you know what I mean?
Well, what did they say, like over 80% of the wealth in the world is held by like three families or something like that? Like crazy. I mean, like the Bilderbergs or whatever.
Bilderbergs.
The Bilderberg family.
They're making huge.
They've got
malls everywhere.
All across America. it's just crazy to see that, you know, that's where we're at. But,
I do have like a sort of like a light of sunshine on that whole idea.
All right. Lay it on.
A lot of people like want to be super haters about the super rich. You know what I mean? Oh, fuck Jeff Bezos. Nobody needs that kind of wealth. But we're sort of at like sort of like a technological like limitation to like how much richer you can be than everybody else.
Sure.
So like basically my point is like, and I really started feeling bad for Jeff Bezos after his divorce. That's such a human problem. You know what I mean? It's like, doesn't matter if you're the fucking richest man on earth, like you still got fucking drama at home. You know what I mean?
Also,
Like, hey, babe, I made $82 million today.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, well, fuck you.
That bitch didn't do anything for Amazon either. She shouldn't get any of that.
I don't know, dude. It's complicated, but man. I don't know. Just my point is that even though, you know, his wealth is like so many thousands of times above my wealth, right?
No, I think it might be millions even.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like the actual number is just like shocking. Yeah. But but basically, like, he's only like, I would estimate like 7 to 15 times richer than I am. Like in the sense of like, what is Jeff Bezos doing that I'm like not? So, sure. And I thought about it, you know what I mean? I thought about all the different ways where he's like beating my ass in like a few different places where I'm doing better than him, you know what I mean?
Let's see, both divorced.
Even playing field. I mean, not even, because I got out of my shit like pretty good.
That's true. That's true.
But yeah, you see, I'm a better negotiator than Jeff Bezos.
Yeah. He might have had more to lose.
He did, yeah, because his wife was like, oh, hell no, I'm about to get that. My wife. I told her straight up, like, if you turn my ass into the Department of Child Support, I'll move to Mexico. and she believed me.
Yeah.
Because I was fucking keeping it real. But
I would.
Man. So now I got a sweetheart of a deal. You know, I pay my child support every single month. But it's like I'm not getting hammered for, like, alimony and stuff like that. And
that's good. That's reasonable. That's the way people should be, you know, the acrimony. Mm-hmm. It's alimony, not acrimony.
Oh, I thought I said alimony.
I know. But no, I'm saying... it's called alimony, not acrimony. People should be more understanding. People shouldn't be vindictive about it.
Oh, I know.
But like acrimonious, you know what I'm saying?
I've just been reading terror stories for some reason. I don't even know why I've been putting that kind of fear into my brain.
Oh, no, it's true. You're right. It happens all the time. I'm just saying that's what happened with you guys is that's the way it should be, where it's too, where
totally
people are just
cool.
Reasonable.
We negotiated, like, hey, you have your position, I've got my position. Like, we both ultimately want what's best for each other and our kids, you know what I mean? So it's cool that we could be emotionally and mentally mature like that, financially mature.
So you're, part of what we're talking about is you've got this plan. You want to, you were showing me everything. Your art setup, mobile art setup.
Yeah.
Like, tell us what you're doing.
All right. Well, man, that's a deep question. So,
all right.
Here we are. Yeah, exactly. Basically, my idea is I just want to be able to have a house in the Southwest and a house in the Northwest.
Oh, man, that's my plan too.
It's just simple as that.
You want to go halfsies?
Yeah, exactly. There's so many ways to make it work if we could just be creative, you know. Yeah. And one of the problems is, like, you and I should be able to go to a bank and be like, hey, what's up? We're ultimate bros. We want to, like, go in on this house together. And they're like, well, no, you can't do that. What the fuck do you mean I can't get into, like, a
investment,
legal, mutually consensual contract with my friend here?
Yeah.
You know, it's like we got to be banging in order to...
to own a house together?
Yeah.
Like, listen.
Like, we want pics.
You must consummate... the only way we're signing this is if there's penetration. We don't care who or how. There has to be something's going into somewhere in this office. And then they hit that little Matt Lauer button.
We need proof. You know how we are about documentation.
Yeah. We need a notary to get, and we need your thumbprints and your cock print.
Got to find a gay priest to get you married. I don't know. But yeah, so that's like one of the constraints of our current financial economic situation is that you have to get a home loan in order to get like a decent home or really any home.
Yeah.
And they just make it weird and hard to do. You know what I mean? I faced that problem as a bartender.
Yeah.
Where basically, and I know it's not really my fault, but it kind of is. I shouldn't even be talking about this shit on this. Just all I'm saying is I can't get a home loan as a bartender.
No, I feel you, because like I doing comedy, a lot of my money's off the books. Like it's just cash.
What?
And I mean, not a lot, not enough that needs to be deducted by the IRS.
It's under $600.
Sure. Yeah, total a year. That's so. I mean, that's in it. You know, I same things. So, like a lot of my income's not provable.
Right.
I mean, it's there. but like I and also
like, you know, Bill's Bar and Grill. I swear to God, I'm friends with the owner.
Like, if I just show up,
give me $80 cash and like
$50
in free drinks. I need you to add that shit. Yeah.
All the pimento, maraschino cherries you want. Yeah, like I can't just like show up with an attaché case, like worth of unmarked hundreds either, and be like, can I use this as a down payment?
And this is a good opportunity to call out the banking system and even credit unions that are locally or nationally. Y'all are bitch motherfuckers that are basically just tax. What's the word? They're tax enforcers. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's not me working with my local friendly neighborhood bank. You know what I mean? That's like looking out for my best interests and caring about me and trying
to make... I've known Sam and his family for generations. Yeah.
And they're like, dude, they're like, Travis is like a really smart, creative guy. Like, he's definitely going to come up with the money. It's not like that. It's like, they're just like, well, did you pay Uncle Sam?
Yeah.
Nope. Fuck you.
Yeah.
And it's like, bro, fuck you. No, but seriously, give me a home loan, man.
Just trying to have a place to live. Yeah, man, it's a crazy time out there. But you're gonna go.
Oh, and then beyond that, because we started saying you're talking about the art thing.
Yeah.
So basically, just all I care about in this world is just like making art, being creative, working with other artists, like just being around the people that inspire me and are basically doing fun, interesting things.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like for myself, I need my art studio to do that. And I just want to have studio space in both cities. And be able to fly somebody like you down. I know you got like your own gear and stuff like that, but then I've got also stuff to like complement what you're doing, and it's like you can travel a little bit lighter, like come down here, we're gonna tear it up, we're gonna film some stuff, we're gonna like really give it our all and just like use this as kind of like a retreat, like sort of like a work spiritual, fill your gas tank, get creative, like
Remove
all
blow.
The distractions. I mean, that's just every day, man. That's what I'm trying to get
bound
away
to
from.
Happen.
Right. I mean, we can't hang out for more than a couple of hours without getting in some kind of trouble.
We're going to get creative.
Spawn that creative powder.
Yeah. I would be super creative for like 40 minutes. Gosh. And then I'm just going to want more cocaine.
Gosh, I just want to say this is such a bad platform for somebody like me who just says stupid ass shit all the time that like isn't real.
How do you think I feel?
People are like, oh, Traz, I heard you do cocaine on the social hour. Nah, you heard me talking about cocaine. You assumed I
wasn't actually doing it on the social hour. Don't be ridiculous. It's bad audio. Yeah.
I think I was talking about doing cocaine and tax evasion on the same podcast. Yeah. Crazy.
Listen, I ate mushrooms and did it on an episode, and it made it very clear we were all really high on mushrooms a while back.
Sounds like a fun episode.
It was a super fun episode. God.
Was it coherent, like, to people who weren't on mushrooms?
Yeah, I went back and listened to it the other day because I'm editing for next week's year-end Best of Social Hour episode. Tune in next week for that. And that was my favorite, arguably, potentially the best episode of the show ever.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and like...
And kind of also not really that surprising. Like, fucking mushrooms are a beautiful drug, people.
They were great. We had Steve Johnson on, comedian Steve Johnson.
Nice.
And Sophie, him, and I ate a bunch of mushrooms, and Jeremy did not. Because he's a bitch. He was scared because he ate some like a week before that, a couple days before that.
I bet your old producer would have eaten them.
I bet he would have, yeah. And we had a great time. And like we laughed so hard. I went back and listened to it a couple times sober. And I'm like, this is actually funny. This is really funny even sober. Like you can tell we're high, but we're not incoherent.
Nice.
And we're like having a good time. And we're making a lot of really great jokes. And it just was super... super good. So yeah, So yeah, do drugs and be on the show is what I'm trying to say.
Also another reason why I'm here.
Yeah. So,
misery loves company. Am I right, Deez?
Oh my God. I mean, I've been sober for 8 months now.
I know.
Minus
I
mushrooms.
Know.
I've done mushrooms a couple
Doesn't
times.
Doesn't count, dude.
Yeah.
And honestly, neither does marijuana, really, in my opinion. Those are the two drugs I think are really, really good for human health and development. Not that you can't take advantage of them and abuse them. But
right. I gave up weed, too, not that I ever smoked a lot anyway, you know, in for the last few years, but I was kind of smoking more than I kind of dropped off. Then I gave up everything. I did smoke the other day for the dope show in Tacoma.
Okay.
I did that. That was fun.
See, that's like almost like better because, you know, you've been sober for so long. So when you like smoke weed again, you get all that like fresh anxiety and paranoia.
Yeah.
Back.
It was, I didn't smoke a lot and I'd been really sick. I was literally like doing almost a bottle of Dayquil a day for like a week straight. So I was pretty fucked up.
That's the good stuff.
Yeah, man. I was pretty fucked up. So let's talk about the art.
Yeah. I just lost my headphones.
Oh,
there we go. I'm good. I'm back.
What kind of art are we talking? What do you want to do?
I mean, honestly, I really see myself doing production.
Okay.
And to me, you know, you are a comedy producer and just like probably the best I know.
Well, thank you. I try.
It's like between you and all the other comedy producers I know, like you definitely are number one. But no, seriously, dude, you really kick ass, and like I know that you're just like a talented guy that you could take that skill anywhere, Costa Rica, and just tear it up down there. But I don't know. I see myself doing as sort of like a producer role, helping develop people, like giving access to resources and things, you know, that start, you know, fresh starting out artists like might not necessarily have.
Yeah.
You know, bring technical knowledge, bring knowledge of like business, like mm-hmm. help find you know, jobs, mural work, you know, film spots, whatever, you know what I mean? And just work with combining different talents, you know what I mean? It's like I know all kinds of like muralists and comedians and musicians
yeah.
and film people, and it's like I know somebody in every, you know, that's got their hand in something, you know, everything,
yeah,
and, you know, just combining that, and then, you know, for me that is an art,
yeah,
you know, producing people, and you know,
well, it is,
living is an art too, yeah. And that's really, it sounds so pretentious. Like, what's your art? Living. But, dude, honestly, fuck the haters. That's real, dude. Just, like the art of living a good life, you know what I mean? It, like, it took somebody like me from Spokane or my grandma or, you know, other people just to be like, oh, it's, like, warm in the wintertime in this other place.
Right.
Like,
why am I not living there?
Yeah. And it's, like, to me, that's, like, the reason you're not doing it is because it's hard. It's difficult.
Yeah.
And so it's, like, you have to find creative solutions to that problem. You have to find ways to make it work to live that life. And I do that, man.
Well, it is that is one thing that's very poignant, is I think a lot of people have a hard time taking that first step in doing anything that's difficult. Just existing and drifting through your day-to-day mundane life, it's very easy to do. I mean, it's not fun and there's struggles, but for so many people, and I think we know a lot of people like this in Spokane, like we know people who are, I mean, no offense. We know people are 40 years old and just bartending, you know. but here,
sure.
No, but here's but like you're trying to do things,
right? Right.
But I'm not even trying. You are doing things and have done things. But we know those people who have like worked downtown since they were 21,
right.
And now they're 41, mm-hmm. and they're gonna, and all they're just doing is like, I bartend a couple days a week, and then I, you know, go out and get drunk a couple days a week, and then. And that's what I do.
That's so real.
Like, that's,
dude,
that's
honestly,
it.
That terrifies me. That absolutely terrifies
right,
that, me.
Right. Right.
And I, to me, I see my career. I work at like the best bar in Spokane.
Yeah.
Number one. It's like so vibrant and full of energy, especially
yeah.
now. It's never been
yeah, the
better.
Airport Applebee's bar is great.
Fuck yeah, dude. We got dollar margaritas and Long Islands on Tuesdays. So come yeah. on in and visit me.
Apple teenies.
No, but. Dude, I've got a shelf life, man. It's
yeah.
like I don't really see myself. I got to do something bigger and better, you know. I don't want to be 40 in there,
yeah.
Like because I have to be, yeah.
Well, and it's different if you're like, hey, listen, I enjoy being around people. You know, I work a couple days a week.
Like come guest bartend for
yeah.
you know, a few weeks here and there.
Or
yeah.
even if you're still doing it a little
That's
bit
badass.
Like you are, but like you're still at least you're trying to do something. The we should start a festival.
Okay.
All right.
All right,
we have to apply for something. How do you do that?
Call it Firefest 2. No, dude, we can do whatever we want, Deez.
Yeah.
We really can. And that's like what I'm on this podcast tonight to tell everybody is we become what we think about. Our mindsets create our reality. And like I know y'all have heard that, and it's kind of is like sort of hippie guru mystical kind of talk, but it's real, dude. And it's like, it's not just real in the sense of like, oh, that's real, that's cool. It's like, nah, that's real. Like, if you're not practicing and focusing and dialing that power in, like, you're falling behind, I guess.
Yeah. Well, no, it's really true. And I think I've, like, I've, in the last year, I've been doing a lot of trying to be like more honest with myself and other people, and like finally like sorting out things in my head of like mental health stuff and realizing how much those things affect me on a day-to-day basis, and trying to not, you know, trying to be more open with it. And it's amazing the how cathartic it is, and how you can like really, I think people don't ever again take that first step, and like they just kind of, you know, so like I was telling someone about, so I think you know this, but like I wrote and published a book about 10 years ago. And kind of the idea of the book, it deep down at its core, was about being able to basically, if you face your biggest fears, your biggest challenges, the scariest things you can imagine, it's going to be really fucking scary and really hard for a while. But once you overcome them, and you will, like, everything else forever is super easy.
Right.
Like, everything else forever is so much easier, you know?
I kind of heard Joe Rogan talking about something like that. Just going from, like, being really poor and having, you know, his car repossessed and stuff like that. And, like, obviously now he's doing just fine.
Yeah.
And it's like he's at a point where he doesn't have to worry about the petty stress of money, which is, you know, for most people, that's their number one.
Right.
You know, that's why I'm so passionate about the whole financial thing, because I went to school for economics, and I really see that that drives people's decision making and what they do with their life, like, huge, way more than it should.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of necessary, though. There's no, you know, if you don't, I mean, that's one of the biggest things is not, I mean, if money doesn't bring happiness, and there is a, there's that cutoff point of where a certain amount of more wealth doesn't make you more happy, but also it allows you some breathing room and time and some of the ability to kind of have some flexibility.
Exactly.
And have choices. You know, when you're poor and downtrodden, you don't really have choices. It's just 100%. Things are thrust upon you, and then, you know, you're forced in, like, you know, the fucking government and the goddamn municipal government just shaking people down for money and like
everywhere. It's, dude. It's, I feel that as just like I feel that in my soul, in my life so hard. I'm always like, I just got my license back today. Congratulations. but damn, dude, why you gotta charge me for that shit?
Well, I so like,
I had to pay the tickets that the cops gave me, that I got to come in here and like pay for my piece of plastic
this
back.
It's bullshit.
Like, tell that cop to give me my fucking ID back.
Well, I actually went not long ago. I went, there were some, it was over the summer, there were some cops sitting around, two motorcycle cops sitting on private property, and they were, had the radar guns out as a speed trap, people coming down a hill. And it's people coming down a hill, they're bound to gain a little speed coming down this hill, unless they're being super attentive. No, people aren't people aren't going 70. They're going a couple miles over. They're gaining speed coming down this hill, probably hitting the brakes. And these people are hiding, literally hiding behind a wall, fucking like coward pieces of shit, fucking hiding, not doing anything else on private property, just trying to fucking bilk the goddamn citizens out of money under the guise of public safety. And it's goddamn bullshit.
It is.
So I stopped.
Amen, brother.
I went up to them and I said, hey, you guys need to leave.
Nice.
And they
geez,
go,
that's ballsy,
and they
bro.
Go, and they go, no, we're, you know, we're police officers. I'm like, I can tell by the motorcycles. Thanks. Like, I go, yeah, but this is private property and you're not allowed to do that here. So, you have to go to public property. I don't care where you go, but you can't be here on private property hiding like fucking cowards. I said this to them, dude. Trying to fucking rape the people of their goddamn money.
All these fools that are coming back from work.
It's going to work. It was 9 a.m. These are hard work. It's not fucking crackheads who have just stole a fucking car. It's people going to work. Right. You're going to make them late for work. You're going to give them a ticket when they're not even like really even technically breaking the law, but spirit of the law, letter of the law. And also, fuck you people.
Trees
we have better things to do in Spokane than fucking sit two cops sitting around just literally waiting for someone to speed so we can take money from them.
When it becomes that situation, it just is a racket.
It is.
It's a criminal shakedown.
Yeah.
You know, and it happens to be legal in this country, but it still is the same. It's highway robbery.
Yeah.
And I don't know, dude, for the cops that do that, it's like you get your own karma. All of your friends and family know what you do at work and know who you are, so... Like, I'm sure that nobody has got your back and respects you in that way.
Yeah.
Because it's like, dude, that's just like who on earth can justify that?
I know. God, the goddamn city can. It's the same thing. I've said this about car. I mean, this happens in any industry, but I've like, listen, if they really wanted to stop drinking and drunk driving, all they have to do. Okay, listen, 1972. They it was in 1968, I think they mandated all cars must have seatbelts. Mm-hmm. In 1972, they started mandating that all cars have the blinking placard that buzzes at you if you don't buckle your seatbelt. Okay? So they say that out of safety, right? If they don't want you to drink and drive, all they have to do is implement a law that every single car now is that rolls off the fucking... production line has a breathalyzer in it. It would cost the car industry about an extra, let's say, be generous and say $7 a unit install those things. And then guess what? Drunk driving, 100% goes away.
100%.
If it's really safety, subsidize that so you can retrofit every single car on the road to make sure that they're all fitted with one. That's all it takes.
Yeah, you deserve an applause for that.
It wouldn't take a lot of money.
That literally is just sound logic. It's based on like precedent in the car industry. There's absolutely 100% reason that that shouldn't or couldn't be a thing.
The only reason is...
Here it comes, folks.
So much fucking money the courts get, the fucking the counseling systems get, the judges get, the lawyers get, the goddamn police officers get. There is millions of dollars.
How much are those breathalyzers? I know are just like the most basic level of technology for 2019, 2020.
Right.
Now
they charge you over $100 a month. Between $100 and $200 a month for them, depending on where you go.
What technology costs $200 a month?
Yeah.
I can go get the newest, Samsung phone or tablet or fucking laptop or what? TV, dude. TVs don't cost $100 or $200 a month. Like,
yeah, I had a buddy.
How long do you have it in your car?
It depends. Did
you tell your viewers you have a DUI?
Probably. I don't know. Maybe.
Sorry, guys.
That's okay.
Right before Christmas,
sorry, guys. The a buddy of mine got a DUI, or he was telling me about it. This is actually a rather large comic. I won't say who he is because he's like a tour nationally. But the guy, he got a DUI a while back, and he's like, it was $100 a month. I had to go in and they charge me to calibrate this thing every month. Mm-hmm. And I went in there one month and the guy's like, hey, if you just give me $600, you don't have to come, you won't have to come back for 6 months. And he's like, oh, that sounds great. And he's like, wait a second. So that just means you're not actually doing anything when I come here. You're just charging me. Like, you're not calibrating anything. You're not actually, the calibration doesn't matter. You're just saying you have to calibrate it, so I pay you.
Right.
So really, it's just about the money. It's not about you actually fucking doing anything when I come in here.
Part of this problem to me is, like, very systemic. It's, like, very root level where we have a system where there's, like, more money created than there is reasonably jobs to provide for them.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So it's like there's only so many real jobs, like in the sense of like, you know, procuring resources, minerals, forests, and then turning them into like houses or, being a farmer, stuff that's very real and tangible. That's like real economic output, in my opinion. So then in lieu of that, we sort of had to create a system where there's like people who are like insurance agents and just paper pushers. And, you know, there's a whole industry behind giving people tickets, and the legal system's like wildly inflated and bloated. And, you know, those people make too much money. And it's like, so you just find ways to kind of create bullshit ass jobs.
Sure.
And so it's like, and I know the argument for the whole police thing is basically just down to numbers. It's like our police departments don't fund themselves anymore. Like,
yeah.
If they don't do that, then they don't have gas to put in their car.
Here's the thing. I just say, like, at least have the goddamn dignity to fucking put out your boot on the corner and hope somebody throws a goddamn nickel in it, you piece of shit, instead of fucking tracking someone down and trying to give them a goddamn ticket just so you guys can make some money. Have some decency to beg, you piece
of
shit.
The problem with that, too, is like, you know, if the police put a boot on the corner and were asking for donations, they would very quickly find out how valuable they are to the citizens.
Yeah.
Because I'd be like, oh, I'll give you a fucking nickel when you find my motherfucking bike.
I was actually thinking about this last night, and I was getting really wound up. But you know this. But I was looking at the paperwork the other day. Assuming I haven't fled the country by then, I am putting my name on the ballot for mayor of Spokane in 2023.
I 100% support that, Deese.
2023? That's the next election.
Okay.
I'm putting my name on the ballot.
Let me officially ask to be your running mate.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you bet, man. You're in the cabinet.
Nice.
And
the reason is I 100% believe that you can legitimately win that race.
You know,
even with all the stupid shit you said on here.
Here's the thing. Here's what I've learned. If nothing else, obviously Trump made it to the presidency. So I can make mayor of Spokane. But
well, there's our campaign slogan.
Trump can, I can. My slogan will be "Grab Spokane by the pussy."
It's provocative. The people, get the people talking.
I think I can win. Originally, this was like a joke. It was just a fucking joke that I said years ago. But the more I say it, the more people have been like, I'll vote for you. Yeah. I'd love it if you were. And then I start realizing, like, I kind of have like a platform in Spokane, being known in comedy and in the things I've done and, you know, what everything I've done, the community, where people know me. And I'm like, I think I could actually have a chance at winning.
I agree. You have a very powerful platform as well. Comedy is like a revolutionary art,
sure,
as far as challenging the status quo. And that's where we're at. You know what I mean? We need funny people with different ideas to like basically shine comedic light on the truth. And
yeah.
I think that's what you could really do well at. And, you know, even with the podcast and all the dumb shit you've said, to me, that's like a benefit. It's like, how much more transparent can you be?
Right.
It's like, if you want to know who I am, listen to the last, you know, 10,000 hours of podcasts I've done.
Right. Give me some downloads.
It's like, where are you at? Where are you at, Nadine Woodward? It's like, I don't have a reason to get offended about Nadine Woodward because I've never even heard her speak a word to me. You know what I mean?
Right.
I guess she was on the news or whatever. But
yeah,
it's like
she wasn't talking just to me.
Yeah, exactly. She wasn't looking me in the eyes, whispering in my ear. But we live in this new time where it's like, dude, you have a studio in your basement. Like, it's never been easier to run for mayor. Like,
yeah.
How many mayors throughout the history of America have had access to a studio?
Yeah.
Well, pretty much none of them until about 2000, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And Nadine Woodward's not using it. She got access to a studio, I would imagine, you know, through the news contacts.
Probably,
but it's like,
yeah,
why aren't you dropping fresh material? You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, put it out there.
Yeah, let people, like, to me, one of the things you could do for mayor is bring transparency to that office.
Yeah.
Be like, dude, I'm going to be out here like recording what I'm doing every day.
Well, that's kind of one of my things I thought about. I mean, I always think about this. Obviously, I said some stupid shit on here, some very offensive things. We all know that. But also, I do comedy.
Right.
Second of all, it is. I've been very transparent. And I've been very passionate also, and I'm not willing to hide. I'm willing to put it all out there, and I really want to, like, shake it up. I really, really want to get in some debates. I really, really want to like force this community to be better.
I do too. That's why I want to run with you. It's like I'm talking like street teams, like calling people out. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'll stand outside of Nadine Woodward's house and be like, yo, what do you got to say about this? Like, we'll have mics, we'll have cameras. Like, what's up? We're ready to debate. Like, we don't got to make it official. Put this on YouTube. Shit.
Think about the fact that every comedy show I do, I can turn basically as a political rally for me.
Right.
I can turn it. I can, you know, vote for me.
Rally, rally.
Put out my, throw out my pins, man.
And you have like the benefit of like anything that you do is like cast in the light of ridiculousness.
Yeah.
So it's like you're whoever you're going against is gonna. They only have one method of addressing the public, and that's being just like serious and very business and proper. Like, and it's like, bro, you're gonna get smoked.
We're
taking this shit to the streets, dog. It's like. Can you fling words? You know what I mean? Can you like mix thoughts with this? Like,
I actually wanted to make a commercial that's like one of those political ads where I'm like, hi, I'm like mayoral candidate Dees Casillas. And I'm here to tell you, would you vote for a candidate that said this and then just play a bunch of clips of horrible things I've said? And then be like paid for by the people for Dees Casillas against Dees Casillas for Dees Casillas for mayor. And then be like, wait. And then people be like, wait, do I like him or not like him?
Right.
Am I supposed to love or hate him? I don't know. He's so charming.
I love to hate him. dude, that actually reminds me of an NPR podcast about Trader Joe's.
Yeah.
And basically, the way they opened that podcast about Trader Joe's was like, would you invest in a grocery store that, like, you know, had small parking lots and never ran coupons and, like, just always had the same price and, you know, did this and that? And the way that they worded it was like, fuck, no, like, that sounds terrible.
Yeah.
But then they're like, well, that's what Trader Joe's did, and they're fucking smoking everybody. And the thing is like, dude, let's shake it up. You know what I mean? I would much rather have a politician that, like, has some dirt on his face and is keeping it real, you know, than somebody. It's like, dude, I bet if I listen to everything Nadine Woodward said in the whole history of her life, like, we could find some gems there too.
Yeah.
You know, anybody, every single person on earth, like, you know what I mean? Who hasn't said dumb shit?
Yo, for sure. Yeah. Absolutely. And the idea that everyone expects people to be squeaky clean and have like never said anything dumb, especially like, I mean, not to make an excuse for myself. I don't care what people think, but people in broadcasting or people who talk for a living, when you're literally talking, free form talking for like 3 hours a day or more, you're just talking, and sometimes your mouth is moving before you're really thinking, and you say things and you don't necessarily, they're not fully formed thoughts. They're just a thing you said. And then you start thinking about it. Maybe you walk it back a little, or maybe you think about it later, like, that didn't even make sense, or that was stupid. But I mean, like,
right, totally.
It's just things that come. I mean, but I like the idea of transparency and just really like getting in there and shaking it up and making, I believe in this community. I think Spokane can be a lot better. I think there's a lot of things we can do. I think there's a lot of faults in our people, our community, our police department, the bureaucracy of this downtown. And I want to change it.
Yeah.
I
well, dude,
make it better.
You can. And I vote for you too, because you are a smart, smart guy. You have like very intelligent, rational, pragmatic solutions. You sort of see through the bullshit of things. Like, you know, you've got a really nice like balance. Like, you want to help people out, but you also like understand the perils of socialism.
Yeah,
you know, stuff like that. Like, you know, you support police officers as like people and don't advocate violence against them, but then also don't advocate for police officers beating fools. Like,
right.
You know what I mean? We find that like nice common ground.
Just Puerto Ricans. See, that's a comment that might come back to bite me.
I know, you just lost the Puerto Rican.
All the Puerto Ricans in Spokane.
Actually, no, two. I'm like,
I know a
I'm
couple
surprised.
Also. Actually, there's someone who listens to this show, my buddy Steve, who's Puerto Rican, who listens, and I like him a lot. And I like, it's funny because I actually never met a Puerto Rican I don't like.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Years ago, I just picked that I was going to make fun of them. And I just always have.
Yeah, it's a shtick.
But there's nothing like literally. I've never met someone. I've one of my best friends in California is Puerto Rican. I dated a Puerto Rican girl for a while. Like, there's nothing. It's nothing. It's just a joke. It's who fucking cares?
Exactly.
So, that's shout out to Steve.
That mentality right there is exactly 100% what this country needs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We get there. And it's not even real people, in my opinion. It's mostly just like false outrage created by the corporate media.
Yeah.
You know, saying everybody hates each other and, you know, makes a big deal about that kind of stuff. And it's like, dude, if you keep it real, it's like that's the real spirit of like love is being able to like make a joke about a Puerto Rican and then also have a Puerto Rican as your best friend.
Right.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and people want to be like,
cancel if he hates Puerto Ricans.
Deez is gonna like make hate speech against Puerto Ricans to try to justify it because he got a Puerto Rican friend. That's bullshit. It's like, dude, fuck, man.
Yeah.
It's like you I don't know, you love everybody, and like honestly, that message comes through. It's like if somebody was to, you know, hear like a negative soundbite that came from the show, it's like I challenge you to listen to the whole entire, you know, or as much as you possibly can. And
yeah,
it's like you'll get a very deep understanding of where you're coming from, and it's from a good place.
Yeah, I like to think so.
Yeah.
So Spokane, we're going to make it better. What do you think would be, what do you think we could do to make, if we, you know.
Number one, one of the major things that we need to do is get the bus plaza out of the middle part of downtown. That makes absolutely no sense. Our downtown is full of one-ways and small streets, and we're literally trying to jam all these big giant buses like into that system. So like logistically, it's not a smart idea. But that's actually not my only reason for wanting to get rid of the bus plaza downtown.
The homeless.
Yeah, it brings a lot of shitty people down. And it's like, I've kind of like said this as a joke before, but man.
Where do we put
it? We have this idea of like, oh, we're going to put our bus station in the middle of downtown. And then all these shoppers from all over the South Hill and the North Side are going to come from all over and go shopping. And it's like, bitch, like nobody that ever rode the bus went to Nordstrom's. Like,
no.
And it's like those shoppers that you're dreaming about, like they have cars at Spokane. So
right,
let's like get on that level. The only people that really use the bus in Spokane, in addition to myself at certain parts of my life, are sort of undesirable people.
Yeah.
And I hate, you know, I hate to put people in that light, but.
No, it there is a lot. Yeah, it's the majority of them are probably
actually
not
you know what, fuck everybody, I'm the best person to talk about this because my work for the last 4 years is literally right across the street from the bus station. And it's like, dude, I just see all of the problems that that causes, you know what I mean? Like there's just a bunch of weird people hanging out, hooting and hollering, like literally just causing problems because they come downtown as like a thing to do.
Yeah.
And then they don't have anywhere to go because they don't have any money. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, you see a bunch of kids like fighting and harassing people for change. And
well, downtown has gotten really crazy in the last few years and it's getting worse. And it's funny because, like, the people who live here and like older people with the money who live north or on the South Hill, they don't want to come downtown because of the people who are down there, because of the parking, because of, there's like a million reasons.
Yes,
and
yes.
If you could figure those problems out and really make downtown a place like a destination,
yeah.
It's not a destination. There's the comedy club and there's, you know, a couple bars, I mean, some bars well, and, but like, there's really not.
One of the problems literally is that bus plaza. Like it is so central. Like it's like it separates our like mall area of the downtown from like sort of like the financial, you know, like the Wells Fargo building and like, you know, because we have a few different like neighborhoods around downtown neighborhoods, if you will, like around that area. But it just is right in the middle and it's huge. You know, it's like imagine if that was like chocked full of like, you know, badass stores and restaurants and like cool bars and stuff like that. It's like then you know, because it all connects to the Skywalk system and everything. Like, it'd be way too perfect.
I think there's...
My solution is to move the bus plaza, like, off of, like, Sprague, like, on the other side of the University District, like, sort of, like, between Altamont, that kind of area, because that's very centrally located. It's, like, close to, like, a lot of north-south, you know, like, Freya area. It's close to the freeway, you know. It's
sure.
It would be logistically a better place.
Yeah.
And then from there, you know, send one or two buses that maybe go through downtown.
Yeah.
In case somebody wants to get there. But yeah.
That makes more sense.
Yep.
The, all right. Oh, that was tiring. We got 50 minutes. We got a little more time.
Yeah.
At
some point, I still have to tell everybody how to get free drinks on airplane flights.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I want to ask you this question. Then I want you to tell me about that. Because I have a way to get free drinks in airplane flights also.
Interesting. All right.
We'll compare ways to do it. I was talking to someone the other day about some different conspiracies and artificial intelligence like that. I want to ask you about your maybe not favorite conspiracy, but most believable conspiracy. What is out there? What's one that like stands out to you?
I've got a few good answers for you. Okay. So, man, there's a lot of really, really obvious conspiracies.
Like
9/11. Simple as that. Like there's a smoking gun involved with 9/11. It was Building 7. A lot of people don't know, but in New York City on that day, on 9/11, two planes crashed into two different buildings, but also a third building, Building 7.
Wait, planes crashed into a building?
Maybe.
Yeah,
maybe.
Well, that's good. Well, okay. Yeah, Building 7, the third building.
So, yeah, and, like, there's footage. Because Building 7 fell down after 1 and 2, you know, there's a bajillion cameras mm-hmm. focused on that area. And so we have all different camera angles of that building come down, and it's 100% a controlled demolition.
Sure.
Some people try to argue it. And I actually wrote a joke kind of about that, just basically the idea of, like, whenever I say, like, oh, you know, it's a controlled demolition, people are like, oh, what are you, an engineer, you know, demolition expert? And so I wanted to make, like, a short skit of, you know, me being at the park and, like, some guy getting his arm chopped off randomly. And I'm like, oh, my God, that guy got his arm chopped off or his arm fell off. And people are like, what are you, a doctor?
Yeah, what are you, amputation specialist?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, you know, that building allegedly came down from fires and stuff like that. And it's like, dude, look at the video. There's not, that building's not even on fire, really.
Yeah.
You know, like, so it's just so obvious. You know, there's another smoking gun. Like, the reason we know that it was Saudi terrorists and all that is because, we found a passport outside on the street. Somebody found a passport and gave it to, like, a Fox News reporter who turned it into the FBI.
Yeah.
Dude, how did a passport go from inside the airplane?
That flew into a building
that, like, completely demolished into its own footprint and, like, then was, like, smoldering and, like, lava was flowing and
shit
like that.
Hey, look, I found a passport.
You know, there's weird stuff like, you know, the Pentagon, like, doesn't really have, like, video footage.
There's no video footage. So that's the one. The craziest part of 9/11 to me is the Pentagon, because that is the one jet that they allegedly really never had any contact with from the cockpit, like, indicating any trouble. That's the one that just kind of disappeared. Every other jet had some sort of, hey, we're in trouble, something's going on, or blah blah blah. And then there's no video footage. The surveillance footage blips out right before it's about to hit the Pentagon.
Right.
And they've actually done studies to show, like, if this jet were to hit the Pentagon the way it did, it would have had to come down and basically skim the ground.
It had to do like a corkscrew, like, huge turn, like, above Washington, D.C., and then come in and fly, like, perfectly level to the ground.
Yeah, and they when they were cleaning it up, investigators came in, they're like, they were finding parts to different jets.
Yeah.
So it wasn't even the jets, the puzzle pieces to the jet pieces they left didn't even match up to the same jet. And if you look at the impact hole, there's no wings, it's a missile,
I mean to me it's like all those smoking guns are very obvious, and I actually just brought this up with my roommate today. You know, I think those things are intentional, and I think the reason they do that is to assert power and basically, like, show people, like, look, we can get away with whatever we
want. Do you think maybe they do that to have people focus on that to throw you off of an even bigger thing?
Yes.
That they're
that's
like
we're going to get into my favorite conspiracy.
So before we do that, real quick, one last thing on the Pentagon thing. This is because you're a numbers guy, and I think this will be that you'll find this funny. I'm sure you're aware of this. The day before 9/11, Donald Rumsfeld declared that the Pentagon lost $2.3 trillion.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
They just did it. Fucking whoops. fuck.
Like, I know we're, like, supposed to be super good at keeping track of things, but
hey guys,
in this one particular incident,
good news, bad news.
Just a little small chunk.
The good news is Tomorrow's still, we're still on for Casual Friday. The Hawaiian shirts are encouraged.
George Bush's brother was in charge of the security contract of those buildings, too.
Interesting.
One and two. And, yeah.
Well, that also brings up the whole no bid contracts Halliburton had to rebuild Iraq.
That's my whole point.
Okay.
I always suspected something was weird about 9/11, but. To me, like, I treated it like a fair court trial.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that was, I was like, well, I want to, like, see motive. You know what I mean? That's the thing that they always ask for. What's the motive? What's the motive?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, we'll be able to wait and see what the motive
is. Is it murder or manslaughter? What are we talking about? I have a motive.
Like, to me, out of 9/11 came, we're going on 20 years of perpetual warfare, like, not just with one country or one group, but against an entire region.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? With, like, trillions of dollars spent since then, and, like, all kinds of war contracts, you know, awarded to Halliburton and all that shit, and, you know, the overthrow of, like, multiple different governments, and it's like that all came from 9/11.
Yeah.
That was it. That's what they were trying to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We have like a military industrial complex in this country. That's what President Eisenhower talked about when in the 1950s as he was leaving office. It was like, hey, there's a machine that wants to go to war, and like you, the American people, have to make sure that shit doesn't happen.
Yeah, he was a very cautionary tale. Mm-hmm. It's funny because you say they spent trillions of dollars. The Pentagon lost $2.3 trillion that they couldn't account for. The quote-unquote jet that hit the Pentagon hit the area where all those documents and things would have been kept to keep track of.
Convenient.
All that stuff went up in smoke.
Yeah.
And then do you know what they spent on the majority of the Iraq war, what that cost?
I know that over 1 million Iraqis lost their lives.
I mean, dollar wise.
Yeah, that's the part that I care about more.
Okay. Well, $2.3 trillion is what conveniently disappeared. The number it cost them, apparently they predicted just a tad bit low on what they needed to steal from the U.S. people. $2.4 trillion.
Ah.
Conveniently, that number is almost identical.
Yeah, it's weird, man.
It's like they knew. They were going to need that money for something.
They're like, well, we lost all this money, but we did find extra money to go to war with Iraq.
Under false pretenses, and then a vice president has no bid contracts to rebuild everything.
And dude,
destroy.
Honestly, like, how much more obvious can you be as far as the Iraq war, you know, that George Bush Jr. carried out? It's like, dude, his father tried to, you know, go to war. He did go to war. Yeah. That was the first Gulf War, you know what I mean? So it's like, oh, now that my son's in power, like, oh, yeah, we're going to do it again. Like, duh, dude.
Yeah.
And actually, George Carlin made me hyper aware of that because I was watching one of his clips where he was talking about the Iraq War. He was talking about George Bush and Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney and Colin Powell and, like, all of these players. And I was, like, thinking that it was, you know, the second war this whole time. And then I realized it was the first one. And I was like, wait, what the fuck, dude? All the same guys are involved? Like, come on.
Yeah. Little on the nose.
That's just one of them. That one's so obvious.
Yeah.
It's very, 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 very sad that I live in a country where, like, that happened. And we've killed all kinds of people needlessly. And it's like, you know, that kind of karma comes back on you. It has to.
I think the craziest thing is what I was talking to my buddy the other day about is the helplessness as a citizen when you really realize what you're living in. Because, like,
that's why I think they make it obvious. Is like, it's not blatantly obvious, but it's just, like, subtle enough that you can find out and then be like, oh.
And then, and then also, they're like a bully. They're like, what?
What are you going to do? Yeah.
What are you going to do?
The secret is shine truth onto it.
Yeah. But even, you know, even once you do, it's like,
and that's what we're doing
we
with
still
the Jeffrey Epstein meme.
Oh, God, that's crazy, too, man. Yeah, that's a fucking thing.
And that one is, like, blatantly obvious, too. You know what I mean? Like, why do the security tapes always go missing?
Right. Why were the guards not doing their rounds that night?
You guys found the security tapes when I stole those M&Ms from 7-Eleven. I'm just joking. That's another thing that didn't happen. That was just a shtick. Yeah, dude. Like, and that one is just, like, so blatant and offensive. Because as a conspiracy theorist, like, I got really excited when we arrested Jeffrey Epstein for the second time. Like, You know, I told my roommate Hunter, I was like, this is like a really big day for conspiracy theorists. Like, this trial is going to be huge. It's going to like shed light on this whole problem. All we have to do is make it to trial.
And then it happened.
And he got murdered like a week later. And I was like, dude, are you fucking kidding me? Like, this is a very, very sad, dark day for American justice.
Well,
like, that guy's literally running around like raping little kids. You know what I mean? With,
his
with
jet
the
was
head
called
honchos.
The Lolita Express. How on the nose? Like, he's literally like,
I know.
He's like, he's not even hiding it.
No, and like all the locals in the area like fucking knew what was going on and shit like that. And it was just like, and exactly. It's like, the idea of being called the Lolita Express wasn't something that conspiracy theorists coined. It's like,
right.
That's what that fool, that's what their flight staff called it. You know what I mean? And it's like, to me, that's bullshit. It's very, very bullshit. Because I know that, you know, Bill Clinton, it's like when you're flying around on Air Force One and stuff like that, like they kind of keep track of like where you're going, who you're visiting with. You know what I mean? And it was like none of the guys in the Secret Service were like, oh, it's kind of strange that you're flying on this plane and everyone's jokingly calling the Lolita Express.
Right, but it also is actually called the Lolita Express.
They're like, oh no, it's not a joke. We printed it right underneath that
like, virgin pussy.
He's like, I'm about to get a whole custom plane wrap for this shit.
The crazy thing is, did you hear that the same day that Jeffrey Epstein was murdered, because he was murdered, earlier that same day.
I actually think he wasn't.
Yeah, well, either way, he killed himself.
No. I think he's alive, dude.
Okay, well, that could be too. But however, whatever played out, that fool's not going to trial.
So boo.
Earlier that day, it was his will was finalized, where the money he had went into a trust that couldn't be touched through civil lawsuits. So all the people who were suing him, even if he died, could still go after his estate civilly, but it was put in a trust and they're unable to get it. So all those people who have no recourse now.
And yeah, that's bullshit, because that's like literally the victims that deserve compensation.
Yeah.
And the other bullshit thing about that is like, that's a false reality in the sense of, like, if I fuck up on my taxes, like, the IRS is going to, like, find all that shit and, like, sell my goods. And my, you know what I mean? So it's like, if there really was political will, Donald Trump could be like, you know, fuck that. We're seizing this fool's assets. Like, we know where it came from.
Yeah.
But that doesn't happen. And it's like, why are people getting shaken down by the tax collectors? But it's, you know, when you're running an international child trafficking ring,
nobody
like,
gives a
you're
shit.
You're untouchable now? Yeah. Like, okay, dude. So, dude, it's all out there, man. It's obvious.
All right. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, that gets me into my favorite conspiracy, the one that I think is fun to talk about.
Okay.
So I've got a favorite podcast behind the Social Hour. It's called London Real.
Uh-huh.
Have you heard of that? No. Brian Rose. It's like an inspiring sort of like one-on-one format where he just like interviews, you know, the best and the brightest, billionaires, athletes, you know, ultra high performers, that kind of thing. And, you know, gets their take on life and, you know, finds out what makes them successful.
Yeah.
So it's just really high quality, good, wholesome entertainment. But he had a guy named David Icke on there. Mm. Are you familiar with David Icke?
I don't think so.
He's the guy that sort of got infamous for alleging that the British royal family was reptilian.
Mm, okay.
Yeah. So, okay. You know, sure. Like basically, like he talked about on the podcast, you know, like, You know, people were laughing at him. It wasn't a situation where, like, people were making jokes about him. It's like he was the joke. You know what I mean? Like you just say David Icke, you know, on a late night show in the 90s, and But he's like, you know, the reason that I'm here today on this podcast is because like all the shit that I've been saying over the years. You know what I mean? It's like, kind of was like, it seems all right. You know what I mean? And I don't want to get too hung up on the reptilian thing, because it's like, it's easy to lose focus by something that's hard to prove and ignore all of the other like brilliant shit that he's saying.
Sure.
So to me, as a conspiracy theorist and a big fan of this like show that, you know, has ultra high performers on it, it was really interesting and cool to see them come together, and I was surprised. But he basically, you know, the London Real guy asked him, like, you know, like, what's the end game? Like, where are we going with this? And he painted an analogy of just like a spider, you know what I mean? And like the spider spins a web, and like the closer to the spider you are, you know what I mean, the closer to like knowing what the actual spider is.
Yeah.
And you know, like the inner branches are like the innermost webs is like shit that we've never even heard about. And then as you spread out, it starts to be like, you know, things that you've maybe like Freemasonry or the Illuminati or, you know, Knights Templar, that kind of shit.
Yeah.
Right? You know, basically he believes that there's just like an alien force, like pulling the strings in this world that is that spider, and that's like controlling the British family and everything out from there. And basically he's talking about the goal of being really like removing human consciousness from the planet and replacing it with artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And at that state, humans are just like 100% controlled. And then all of our like energy and labor and everything that we're doing is just going to be to serve this mysterious spider.
Yeah.
And
we could be already doing that.
Well, we could be, but I think that it's not 100% totalitarian at this point.
Sure. But I mean, we could be doing things that fuel an engine we're not even aware of.
Right, right.
That's what I mean.
That's one of the things he talks about, you know, like this spider basically feeding off of negative human emotion. And so like when there's, you know, great destruction from wars and financial collapse and murders and rapes, and, you know, as shit gets wild, like it's able to like just, it enjoys that, it feeds off that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm 100% for human emotion and like the real humans. Like I think there's something special about our heart and our consciousness that's just like different than pure logic, you know?
Yeah.
It's really important to be human, and where our society is destroying that level of humanity. That's why so many people are depressed and sad. And,
yeah.
And so, but basically that's the conspiracy I think is really interesting, is like watching humanity progress into this sort of like Orwellian, A Brave New World kind of like totalitarian future. And it's like, it's real. One of my first conspiracy theory I ever got into without realizing it, knowing it was a conspiracy, was from the Book of Revelations and the Mark of the Beast.
Yeah.
And I was like, for some reason, just like really interested in the Mark of the Beast as a little kid. And I like have always asked Christians about it when I made them Catholics, Christians, whatever branch, Mormons.
Yeah.
And a lot of Christians are like really unaware of it, you know what I mean? But in the 90s, I remember finding Christians that knew about it, and the Mark of the Beast.
Revelations was really big in the 90s for some reason. Doomsday stuff was huge in the 90s.
Yeah, truly. But for those that don't know, the Mark of the Beast is basically like an implant into your like right hand that allows you to like exist in society.
They said your
like,
hand or your forehead.
Yeah,
is
yeah,
what
exactly.
What the book?
Or it could
Bible.
Be your butt cheek. Like we don't need to get too.
Well, I think the Bible actually specifically says like your hand or your forehead is what it says where the,
that's
where
right,
the mark
that,
will
that
go.
That is right. That is right. And so I remember like talking about it in the 90s, and it was just such a wild, like revolutionary, like so far out of the field that people were like, if anything remotely close to that happened, like there would be a militias formed overnight, Christian militias. And it's like, but watching it progress, dude, it's so much more subtle and sinister. It's like, dude, I see the Mark of the Beast coming out. It's going to be the iPhone 20, say, and people are going to be lined up around the block to get it.
Yeah.
There's, and it's the sinisterness of like dealing with like Satan, if you will, if you want to like put it in religious terms, is that he's like so slick of an operator.
Yeah.
In the sense that he's like, well, like, do you want little children? Like we could GPS track them. Do you want your kids to go missing? No, nobody wants that. Or imagine like, you know, locks that you don't have to worry about, have a key anymore. It's just like, you're either allowed to go in the door or you're not. That's cool, man. Like, you know, never have to have car keys, never have to have door keys. Like, all your medical records are with you. Your wallet's always with you. Like, there's just no problems. Like, you can exist in this society so seamlessly and fluidly with this Mark of the Beast. But then there's also a downside, you know?
Well, I think that's really, if you look about it, think about it, that not only are they physically implanting things in people now, but we've already had something like that in our hands for years, the cell phone. We put ourselves in that cell phone. There's a profile of us on Facebook, our likes, our dislikes, our pictures, facial recognition, a whole profile. You can buy things with your cell phone.
And that profile
your phone.
Is strange because I understand that Google and Facebook in some ways understand me better than I know myself.
Because to them,
it's all just data.
It's just a mathematical equation.
They know how much sleep I'm getting. They know like what I eat for breakfast. Mm-hmm. Well, they can see all of my thoughts in real time.
Well, you are AI. You are artificial intelligence already on a certain platform. That's mm-hmm. the scary thing. We already are. And yeah, they do know us better. They know everything about us. They're listening. They're watching. They keep our tabs on where we are. They're tracking our movements.
Unless you're Jeffrey Epstein.
Then whoops, I slipped through the crack. All right. Well, okay. I could go for hours on that, but we've got a little bit of time left, and I know you wanted to tell us how to get a free drink on an airplane.
To always get free drinks.
Always get free drinks on a jet.
So, man, I guess I could just get into it, but just to tell you a little bit of backstory, like as I've just been traveling around, I've been consistently impressed with my ability to like somehow wrangle up free shots on the airplane. And it's come from like all different types of people, stewardess, mostly the people that I sit next to, and I've been really, really surprised at the randomness of the people I sat next to.
Okay.
It's led to some like very extraordinary stories, like meeting the Prince of Ethiopia.
Oh, I remember that.
And you know, it's one of those things where it's like that particular story in particular is interesting because my friend Zach dropped me off at the airport and like, you know, I was bragging about getting free shots and shit. And he's like, well, how are you going to get free shots on the plane this time, Traz? And it's like, freak, I got to step up. You know what I mean? I got people waiting to find out how this is going to work out. But so here's how you do it.
Yeah.
All you have to do is believe.
It's like The Secret.
Yeah, basically.
You just believe you're going to get shots and you get shots.
So it's like, I know it sounds like a cat poster, but it's true. in addition to believing, and this, it kind of is the secret. You know, our thoughts precede our realities, and like, it's more real than I feel like we're giving it credit.
I agree.
So believe, be uniquely you, 100% authentically yourself.
Yeah.
Picking out people to sit by as part of the process. Mm-hmm. First, before we get in that, I recommend flying Southwest.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It's a great airline. They treat everybody right. And I think their employees have some level of autonomy over deciding if people can get free shots without getting in trouble.
Sure.
So, you know, I think they're a little bit like loosey-goosey with that. So that helps. So I recommend starting off by walking onto a Southwest airplane.
That's a good, okay.
And then you got to pick out the people that you sit next to.
Yeah, you get to choose on Southwest. That's a good thing. There you go. So you're already, it's a free market society in the air.
And one of the things that I do is just like habitually check in really late, or I'm always doing hood rat shit at the airport. And so it's like, I'm on like the last person on the last flight. I was the last person running towards the gate. And so it's like, I got a whole pick of an airplane. You know what I mean? It's like, there's just certain seats available, like usually middle seats in between people. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I don't know. I just follow my heart in that sense. And it's just like, for some reason, I just sit down next to cool people. And I've even on my last flight, I even challenged myself. I sat next to this like really nerdy old looking white dude. And then just like a Janet looking like worker lady that was like 65 and like didn't really look that happy. And like, isn't normally the kind of person that is very pleased with my shenanigans. But I sat right in the middle of them. And I was like, there's no fucking way I'm getting free shots on this shit. And lo and behold, like the lady next to me was like cool as hell. We were kicking it. She had these drink coupons, and I was just like, dude,
"Let's do this,
like,
Mildred."
Yeah, you know, she's like, "Woo!" You know, we had two drinks. She's like, "I'm gonna be drunk when my daughter picks me up." Like, so that's part of the fun part is just picking out the people to sit by. And you know, life's like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're gonna get.
Yeah,
you know, it's hard to judge people. My other advice is to be cool and have fun. You know what I mean? Just be part of the experience for everybody involved. Like, be a pleasant.
Well, you can't force it. You just got to go with it. You just
I'm not like shaking. Exactly. I'm not like bumping Mildred next to me. Like, yeah, what's up on them free drinks, lady?
You got a coupon hanging in your pocket?
You know, it's like I'm authentic, and it's like, you know, start off by like talking to people about their life and like how they're doing and who they are and why they're flying. And I'm always in good spirits when I fly. Have fun with it. And the other thing to do is create value. Nothing's free.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like you can create value by like listening empathetically to somebody's story about like their daughter who's like in a certain circumstance and that's happened, you know? And it's like, you can create value. One of the ways that I created value for the girls that got me shots in New Orleans was just by like letting them know about the town that I lived in. I was flying back for the second time and I'm like, dude, like, you should stay in this neighborhood. You should stay in this hotel. Like, you should check this place out. You know what I mean? And so they're like, oh, sweet. Like, I want to listen to more of what this guy's saying and
yeah.
get his opinion, you know? Engage with the flight attendants.
Mm-hmm.
That's important. You know,
very important.
I've gotten a lot of free shots just from them or, like, you know, bought in shots that I expected to pay for. And then, like, when all was said and done, they're like, hey, man, have a good night.
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, thanks, homeboy. Man. You know, they're people too.
Yeah.
Like, they're freak. They have to do the same job over and over again every day. It's like, have fun with them. Talk to them. Be like,
right.
You know,
makes a difference for them.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, then I got Fly Southwest again. Yeah, that's a good one.
Double down on that.
Yeah, I said, be real, be ready to drink, and be ready to buy drinks. Like, be authentic. You know what
sure.
I mean? Like, I'm not just coming on the airplane looking for a scam. It's like, to me, like, the drinks on Southwest are already a good deal. Like,
yeah.
It's way better than buying them inside the airport. And it's like, it's fun. You know what I mean? Like, I want to be drinking and having a good time with the people. It's like, and so I order drinks with the full confidence of knowing, like, if this fucking shit doesn't work out, then I'm going
to
pay for them.
Yeah, I'm going to.
You know what
yeah,
I mean? Simple
to,
as that.
Sure, yeah.
But I'm not getting the drinks because I want them for free. I'm getting the drinks because I want them.
Right. You're being true to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then the universe rewards.
That's right. It's crazy. man. And then, yeah, basically just sum it all up as, like, have fun, be cool, and believe.
All
you
right.
know what I mean? Like, this experience is so unlimited. The amount of potential that exists in this universe, in this world, our reality, is unlimited.
Yeah.
So, like, just have fun and play with that idea. And then, you know, show gratitude. One of the ways that you show gratitude is by following your heart. Like, the universe gets excited when you're, like, doing something that makes you happy and, like, is bringing, like, more joy and beautifulness into this world. And it's, like, you get rewarded for that.
Yeah.
It says, just be the kind of person that gets free drinks.
That's the best part of the advice. That's there you go. That's get your free drinks. That's all good advice. My method is far less noble. Traz is in tune with the universe. As usual, he's having genuine conversations with people. He's trying to engage naturally and demonstrate value.
Can I guess yours?
Yeah.
buy all the drinks you want with your credit card, and when you land, cancel the credit card. I dispute these charges.
I wasn't in the sky. Who has money in the sky? That's ridiculous. No, my method is I generally fly Alaskan Airlines.
Okay.
That's my favorite airline to fly. I've flown them quite frequently. I've never had a bad experience.
They hook it up with free drinks on holidays.
Do they? Okay.
Yeah. I got like an IPA on President's Day or something weird.
So here's what I discovered. First of all, I have a thing where I like to, it's a weird thing, but I tend to dress up when I fly. Mm, and I
yes.
think not like, not tie and stuff like that, but I generally adorn a blazer. Like a blazer, jean, nice jeans, you know, tucked in, button up, and some dress shoes. Like that's how I travel. I travel very light, so I'm not bothersome to the staff. I usually like to take late night flights.
Yeah.
And I always sit at the far back row because the flights you usually take around the Northwest and stuff with Horizon, Alaskan Horizon, the stewardesses are in the back.
Yeah.
Next to the back row. And usually people don't like to sit in the back row because you can't recline the seats.
By the porta potty,
right? Yeah, so I take that seat, and
that's interesting. I've gotten one of my most drunkest on a plane in that seat.
Yeah, that's me too, a couple of times, and then
leaving Las Vegas.
I also know that Alaska serves Big Sky Brewery beer in their flights as their premium beer, which is a beer brewery out of Missoula, Montana, mm-hmm. which I am quite familiar with. So, when they ask if you want a beer, I always say, "Yeah, you know what? I would love one." And then I always take the Big Sky. I'm like, I always act surprised. Like, oh yeah, Big Sky.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
You got Big Sky. I like that brewery. You know, my mom's from Missoula, and I always mean to visit that brewery. I make a story about how I love it, or I go there all the time, or I haven't been there in years, or I've always wanted to go there, depending on the lady.
Yeah.
And then I become friendly with them, and then I usually give them a good tip the first time, and then I'll sit in the back and chat with them. I turn on the charm, and then next thing you know, they're like, hey, you want another one? Well, I guess I could. I mean, it is. I do like that beer a lot. And then next thing I know, they're just handing them to me.
Yeah, yeah, totally. But that's it. It's like what you did there is kind of the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
You just like are being yourself. Like you are familiar with the brewery because of your own like things and
alcoholism.
Oh man. Basically, the advice is like be interesting, and I got that from Dave Chappelle teaching Will Smith to do comedy. And, you know, Will Smith's a big actor, and he's like, I'm going to go to the best person to do comedy and get some advice. And basically Dave Chappelle's advice to Will Smith was, number one, be confident because you're Will fucking Smith.
Yeah.
and then the second part, the real advice is just like, well, that's real too, but the advice, and Dave Chappelle got this from a comedian, and he said, you know, when you go out on stage, you don't always have to be funny, but you always have to be interesting.
Yeah, it's great advice.
Mm-hmm.
The confidence thing is too. You can really sell comedy off confidence a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people lack that. That's that's a big thing.
Right. Confidence, because it's like if you don't stand by your own ideas, like do you expect anybody
the audience
else to?
Isn't going
to
buy them if they feel like you're not even buying it. So.
Yeah.
All right, we got to get out of here. So, you got any other tips before we go? Anything else you wanted to say before we get out of here?
Yeah, I do.
What do you got?
I think we all just like you guys. If you're out there hurting this winter, thinking about needing to take a break, like don't be afraid to do that. Like we all need to like take more time to refill our emotional gas tank and do what makes us happy and healthy.
Yeah.
And sometimes that is difficult to do. And it involves a lot of like risks, and hardship, you know, missing family, stuff like that. But it's like, dude, you're so important. You deserve it.
Yeah.
You know, nobody else is going to treat you right in this world. Like if you want something, you just got to get out there and take it and don't be afraid. Follow your heart. And believe.
He's talking about rape. rape, if you want to know. I'm kidding. Yeah. No, that's great advice, especially for the holiday season. It's a time when people get down. Follow yourself. Follow your dreams. Do what you want to do. Don't take time for yourself. All great advice. I agree with that 100%. All right. Guys, I think we're going to get out of here. I am tired. I haven't slept in like 5 days. And I got shit to do tomorrow morning, but we appreciate you coming around. Traz, thank you very much for coming on. This is a great time, as always. Love seeing you, man. Come back again soon. When you get back from your adventure, we'll have you on again.
Sweet, that sounds great.
And guys, as for me, go the Social Hour Comedy Showcase at Shooters in Lewiston this Friday. I won't be there, but it's going to be a great show. Then you can catch me New Year's Eve at the Spokane Comedy Club. 2 shows, New Year's Eve. Come spend ringing the New Year 2020 with me. And also mark your calendars for January 11th at the Black Diamond. We're bringing Social Hour Comedy Showcase back to there. It'll be our third show there. First two are sold out, guys, so get your tickets early. That show is going to sell out again. I guarantee it. So,
this is going to come out before New Year's?
This is going to come out, yeah.
Oh, like, I got a plug. Come visit me at the piano bar.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, come
on. $10 pre-sales for New Year's Eve party. Yeah, I know that's crazy. Huh? It should be way more, but... Yeah. Or $15 at the door, still under what I think it should be. But yeah, come sit in my section. Like, we're going to hang out, ring in the new year, have a couple shots.
All right, go see, come see me at the comedy club, then go see Traz or vice versa. There's 2 shows at the comedy club. So, nice. All right, guys. Follow Traz on Facebook at Traz Swartout. You can now spell it in the, it'll be in the link. We'll have him back soon, guys. Again, for the social, I am Deason. For Traz, thanks very much for listening, guys. And now for my weekly apologies. I'd like to apologize to Traz's grandpa, Build-A-Bear, Jeff Bezos' wife, loan officers,
credit unions, Applebee's, Nadine Woodward, women voters, and anyone who still believes in 9/11. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we will see you next week.
The only way we're signing this is if there's penetration. We don't care who or how. There has to be something's going into somewhere in this office.
This podcast is a Pants Pending Studios production.
And part of the Pants Pending Studios podcast network.
Find more of our great shows just by searching Pants Pending in your podcatcher.
For more information or to contact us directly, visit us at pantspending.com.
Please subscribe to this show, share it with your friends, like it on Facebook, and rate it on iTunes.
And we thank you for making us a part of your listening day.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending. Studios!